I had to rebel to become free. I am free now, but because it took rebellion, for religious people, that becomes Jesus Christ. Probably the most famous rebellious person in all time, of all time. But he was searching for freedom, not just for himself, but for everyone else to say, look, you do not have to be captured by these so-called systems that are telling you to live a certain way.
For me, I see our color, black people. The reason why I'm saying there's a lot of unlearning and relearning that we need to do as black people. But I'm against how we treat each other as African people. That's what saddens me.
Okay. You have a privilege because you don't look foreign.
How does a foreign person, if the how you put it, look like? I think I have a problem with that.
Why do you have a problem with it?
Because if you're going to say to me, I'm a black man as much as you are a black man.
Sure.
And if you're going to say you don't look Mozambican, of which I get a lot, how does a Mozambican supposed to look like? Babu Mlotsha, thank you so much for joining me on the show. I am very excited, actually, to have this sit down. And at the same time, what can I say? A bit nervous.
Jeez.
but I'm very excited because I am mostly interested by how your views on things and your thinking process, that's what intrigues me. And so I'm excited for this conversation.
Thank you, bro.
How are you feeling today?
No, Peter, I'm good. I want to congratulate you on your platform.
Thank you.
Most importantly, because you're more into education, which I know we struggle with as a country.
Mm.
I think entertainment podcasts are easier to sell.
Mm.
And you chose to go for the harder one, which is education. Number two, I want to congratulate you on, as we film this, the latest episode that you've done.
Mm.
I think it's doing very well. And for a new platform to get those type of numbers is absolutely brilliant.
Thank you.
And I hope you'll be able to build on that.
Thank you.
Congrats on your son. Congrats on your business. I hear that you live in a very uppity neighborhood in Joburg.
Shout out
to you for that.
Please don't put me
and, out there. Yeah, man, I just want to say I'm really proud of you more
Thank
than anything.
You.
And I'm wishing Thank this you. Platform the best.
Thank
the best.
You.
I hope you get all the type of success that you're looking for.
Thank you.
Yeah.
With you here, that shows that I'm going to the right direction.
don't know about that, but we'll hope.
What shaped your hunger for truth and independency?
Jeez, that's a very difficult question. Very difficult question. I don't have an answer for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can go to the next question. I don't have an answer.
No, that's impossible.
I'm kidding, I'm kidding. One of the things I've been struggling with is trying to figure out if leadership can be built, if entrepreneurs can be trained, if a curious mind can be developed. I'm slowly, as I get older, accepting that I think some people are just born with something. It's a very sad realization for me because it goes against everything that I thought growing up. I thought giving kids opportunities, giving them resources, letting them read the books, get the mentors is all they need. But as I'm saying, as I've traveled the world, the country, as I've met a lot of really, really amazing people, it looks like some people are just born with something. So what that means to me, to answer your question, is I think I was born with a curious mind.
Wow.
I don't think it was cultivated by school or my family or some mentor. And because I have a curious mind, what happens with a curious mind is a curious mind goes out to search. And if you don't have access to the internet, you go to the library. If you don't have a car, you catch a taxi, you catch a train. If you don't have funding, you go and you hustle and you beg because you genuinely want to find something. So I don't have like a smart answer. I've got a very lazy answer. And the lazy answer, I think I was just born with a desire to find answers. And the more answers I found, the more answers I wanted. The more people I met, especially successful, famous, powerful people, the more I realized that most of what we know is a scam. And I went on this path, which I still am on now, of trying to find truth.
Wow.
But I can't tell you that there was a special moment. You know, Mr. Whoever in grade 10 planted the seed in me. Or, you know, I was watching Nelson Mandela coming out of prison. Or, you know, I saw my mom, I'd be lying. I think I was born with a curious mind. And I think now, today, maybe my answer could change. I think today, most people who are searching for truth are just either born with something that pushes them to pursue, or they have some type of experience that sparks their mind to go on a journey.
Would you say you see the world differently from how a normal person sees the world?
That's a fact, because it's been tested for me. I post on Twitter every day. You look at some of my videos and the pushback I get, which tells me that by and large, my views are contrarian and different. So I've been tested. There's a lot of people who are like me, but they're not on platforms. They're not sharing their views. Yeah. They're sitting in their corner like, hey, maybe I'm crazy. Maybe I'm weird. And people like myself, I'll mention Elon Musk, I'll mention Kanye West, I'll mention Tupac, I'll mention Lauryn Hill. There's a lot of alternative thinkers. When everyone is saying, go get married and get a good job, well, Peter's like, no, I want to start a business. When everyone is saying, look, your family's from Soweto, you're born in Baragwanath, you know, you must focus there. You're like, no, I want more for my life. When your parents send you to Mozambique to go and study, you're like, no, I want to conquer the whole of SADC. So some of us are just alternative. It's not out of wanting to be difficult. It's because we look at the average and we're not happy.
Wow. Yeah. You know, a normal person would look at your opinions as being rebellious. Would you consider yourself a rebel or a free man?
Is there a difference?
You tell me.
So a rebel goes against the status quo. A free man is someone who is living in their truth and their independence. So you can be a free and independent man that's not rebelling. You're like, I'm free. I'm happy with the system. It works for me. I'm winning. And I'm free. Rebel has to do with, or rebelling has to do with going against. I had to rebel to become free. I am free now, but because it took rebellion, I'm now seen as a rebel. And the examples of the people I gave now are, well, the names of the people I gave now are examples of that. For religious people, that becomes Jesus Christ. Probably the most famous rebellious person in all time, of all time. But he was searching for freedom, not just for himself, but for everyone else, to say, look, you do not have to be captured by these so-called systems that are telling you to live a certain way. I am the way, the truth, and the light. And through me, you should be able to see what's possible. And he ignited a psychological and spiritual revolution that is still around even today. He wanted freedom like many of us wanted freedom. Unfortunately, the system doesn't like free thinkers because it disrupts what they're trying to do. So I do have rebellious thoughts. I do have alternative thoughts. But it's mostly in the pursuit of a freedom that is meant to be healthy. Freedom doesn't have to be destructive. Being free doesn't mean you have to shout and fight.
True.
It can just be like, well, this is what I want to do. Leave me alone. But when a system doesn't want to leave you alone, wants to tax you, wants to tell you, you need a passport. This is a border. No, your child has to go here. No, you don't have rights over. You're like, I don't think I'm free anymore. I should choose to opt in your system. But you're not allowing me to choose. You're forcing me. And I don't like that.
No. Yeah. I like the fact that you mentioned freedom. And now that intrigues me, because now I want to know, what's the biggest illusion of freedom that most people are living under?
You sound like you already have an answer. I'll give you mine. I'm not going to change my answer. Please give me yours. What do you think is the biggest illusion of freedom?
You know, for me, you spoke about systems now, you know. For me, I feel like we are enslaved in our heads, for lack of better words. I think there's a lot of unlearning that we need to do to learn, to relearn. I think there's a lot of things that we need to unsee to see again. I don't know if I'm making sense.
You're not. Maybe to me, but to the audience out there, it sounds very philosophical.
No, No. For me, I see, and I'm going to speak about our color, black people.
Yeah.
The reason why I'm saying there's a lot of unlearning and relearning that we need to do as black people. For number one, I'll talk about entrepreneurship. That's a topic that scares most black people. That's a risk that most black people are not willing to take.
Sure.
If you tell a black person right now to say, an ordinary black person to say, at your 9-to-5, work to save, to start a business, they will tell you that I will never leave my comfort nest.
Mm.
The salary brings in security for me.
Mm.
But like I always say, there is no growth that will come from that. There is no way that we're going to build millionaires with people that don't want to take risk.
Mm.
There's no way that we're going to build millionaires with people that are still enslaved in the old ways of thinking.
Sure.
So that's why I mean by we need to relearn certain things.
Yeah.
As black people.
You said we need to unsee certain things. Do you have any examples of that?
Well, now, I think that goes hand in hand with learning and relearning.
Mm.
So what I mean is that unsee the things that we think, the things that we think that are true, that we see, might not be true.
Celebrities.
You
rich,
know?
Soft life.
You understand?
Yeah.
It might not be true. So we need to unsee that so we can see clearly.
Yeah.
You know, another example is, you know, the, what the system says, go to school, graduate, get a qualification, and then get a job.
Mm.
You know, maybe we need to unsee all of that and unlearn all of that.
Yeah. And the world has changed. That model is not working for a lot of people. I must give you my answer.
I'm waiting.
You were saying us black people, but you're yellow.
Come on now.
May I ask you a question? It's going to go in a deviation from what we're speaking
about. Please, please.
Your parents are not South African.
True.
Where are your parents from?
Mozambique.
Mozambique?
Yeah.
You grew up in Mozambique for a while.
Just, yeah, for a while.
Okay.
And then came back to South Africa for school.
What are your thoughts around Operation Dudula, Abahambe, and the borders?
I mean, I'll be very honest.
Mm.
It's sad to see.
Okay.
Because how I see us as one nation.
Who is us?
Africans.
Okay.
I don't see a Zimbabwean or a South African or as a Mozambican any different.
Yeah.
Right? For me, we are all the same. But at the same time, I do understand that we live in a country where there's law and of which we need to abide by that law.
Sure.
And yes, if people are here illegally, then steps must be taken so that they're here legally.
Okay.
That's fully understandable.
Okay.
And if people are here to come and mess up the country, that also cannot be allowed.
Sure.
Do you understand?
Okay.
But now you find also people that are here for the right intentions.
Mm.
You find people that are here contributing to the economy.
Yeah.
You know, so my take on that is it's sad to see, but it's also necessary. But I think that as people, we need to educate ourselves and learn about our brothers and sisters, because what I see and what I witness is we don't look at each other the same. We don't look at each other as brothers and sisters. We don't look at each other as umfowethu.
Sure.
Sihlukene. Asibona bandawonye. Ikwerekwere lele.
Sure.
You know, that's sad to witness. I am not against the law, but I'm against how we treat each other as African people.
Mm.
That's what saddens me.
Okay. You have a privilege because you don't look foreign.
How does a foreign person, how you put it, look like? I think I have a problem with that.
Why do you have a problem with it?
Because if you're going to say to me, I'm a black man as much as you are a black man.
Sure.
And if you're going to say you don't look Mozambican, of which I get a lot, how does a Mozambican supposed to look like?
That's a bad example from a South African perspective. Lesotho, Eswatini, Mozambique, Namibia, Botswana, they look South African. You can't distinguish. You can go Tanzania, Angolan. But they look South African. It's normally
sorry
different.
Sorry to disturb you, but how does a South African look like?
It looks like the people of this area. So if you speak about a Chinese, if you speak about a Nigerian, if you speak about a Puerto Rican person,
yep.
They have a stereotype look. So similarly in South Africa, when I say a South African, I mean black South African because we've got colored South Africans that look different.
Mm.
We've got white South Africans that look different. So when you see a white person, it's difficult to say, oh, that's a South African because you can't see. But from a black perspective, at least in the SADC region, you can see we're related. There is a generic aesthetic that holds. Individually, of course, it changes. But this is what I'm saying. There are South Africans who are very dark. And because they're dark, there are people that assume they're not from here, which means there are certain countries somewhere that are known, let's say Sudan, to have dark people, tall people as well. So you're very tall and very dark, or you are tall and very slender. So it's like, are you from Ethiopia? Or because just like you, with myself, I've had a lot of non-South Africans ask, are you from Tanzania? Are you from Ethiopia?
Mm.
I'm like, oh, I'm from South Africa. They're like, oh, you don't look South African. Because clearly they also have a certain picture of the stereotype of a place.
Mm.
I'm only saying this because you raised the concept of it's sad how we treat each other, which is true. And the sadness is an other, a different. You don't look like people I know or like. You don't sound like people I know or like. It's why we have all the prejudices, xenophobia, homophobia, racism. It's you don't look like my people. And in your situation or in your circumstance, it must be interesting because on top of that, ukhuluma isiZulu. So when you walk and they're like, no, abahambe, they'd be like, I know, mfowethu, dula. When we write. So you have that type of privilege. It's the same way some of us speak good English or speak Afrikaans. In certain spaces when we speak, white people get comfortable. So we get treated better than our black brothers and sisters who don't because they become an other to white people. So I get by. It's like, oh, well, Penel's lucky because he speaks good English. And then I also get upset. I'm like, but why do you have to treat other people differently? So I just wanted to ask your experience in terms of looking and sounding different to other people from Mozambique, Zimbabwe, etc. How do I phrase this question? I had a lady, Ursula Mariani, that I sat with.
Okay.
Her father is Malawian. And she's incredibly pretty. And I was asking her about pretty privilege. So I guess the question for you and for maybe other non-South Africans, it's how do they feel passing some type of privilege where they speak local languages, where they don't look like an other? Do they feel great about it? Does it give them a complex? I don't even know if it's like a direct question.
Look, how can I phrase this? I wouldn't say it's a privilege. I had to learn just like everybody else. I had to go through certain discrimination just like everybody else.
Why?
I think...
Who was discriminating against you?
You know, when it comes to accent, sometimes when you speak, especially when you're learning, they can tell that, you understand.
Yeah.
And being in an environment where it is visible, being in a community where they can show you that we're now Suwala.
Yeah.
And this is on Patanga Lendlele
Tease.
Sure. You understand? Having to have that fear... Sometimes you say, okay, njengoba ngiphuma ngegate la, ngaze ngiyohlangana nani ngaphandle. I had to go through all of that. like everyone else.
Yeah.
But I think to answer your question is it boils down to you as an individual.
Yeah.
Because people can say to me, oh, you don't have an accent. But it's up to me to say, I want to learn.
Yeah.
I ngiyalthanda ulimi labafowethu. Kairata puoe. You know, kabakwishisha ba. You know, it's all up to me to say, I want to learn that.
Yeah.
And I took it upon myself to say, I'm going to learn and I'm going to understand and I'm going to be good at what I'm doing. Now, it comes back to you find a certain group of people. Maybe I'll make an example. Maybe Zulu people. You find Pedi people. They can't speak Zulu. And Zulu people can't speak Pedi. And then there's that communication barrier.
Sure.
To me, it's like we all have the opportunities to learn each other's languages. If we truly consider ourselves as brothers and sisters and one nation, then we should be able to learn these languages. You go back to school. Ekolweni zaselokishini, there are subjects where there's Zulu, there's Xhosa, there's Tswanas, and then bazothi Tswana kids, they will go learn Tswana. But why don't you, if you are Zulu, they put you in a Tswana class. And you are a Tswana, they put you in a Zulu class. So it starts from there. Then these kids grow up knowing how to speak.
But they don't want.
But it's not a matter of wanting. It's communication. You understand that in the country that you are living in, there are different type of people. There are different type of languages. It's communication. It's the same way we prioritize English.
We prioritize English because of the economy. So the same thing you're saying, and I guess this becomes a privilege of which I think you have a lot. By the way, this is just my observation. Number one, yellow bone privilege, just generally. It's a thing, unfortunately, in society. I don't know if you have dual citizenship.
Yeah.
That's a privilege.
I was born, yeah.
Sure. So you have, I'm asking if you have Mozambican citizenship.
Mm-mm.
Oh, so you only have one citizenship.
Mm-mm.
Okay. Your desire to learn, of which most people don't want to. And we can speak about black people, but most white South Africans can't speak a language outside of either the English or Afrikaans in a country that is 80% black. So they're not interested at all.
Mm.
A lot of foreigners that come in, now not African, I'm speaking your Chinese, I'm speaking your Taiwanese, your Bangladeshi, your Pakistani, they're not interested. They're just here to make money. You actually had a desire to want to learn, to want to understand your community. And you have a privilege of wanting to see, let's call it humanity, where even within South Africa, even within Mozambique, there's discrimination between different cultural groups, which means people actually don't want. Now, we're taking your Zulu child and we're telling them, no, they have to learn Setswana. It's like over my dead body. This is not a foreign language. This is not a language from West Africa. It's from here.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, I'm not interested. My child's going to learn Zulu. They will learn English because unfortunately we were colonized by the British and the economy is run by. But outside of that, people are not interested. So you have these privileges, which unfortunately for everyone else, they really don't care. And I'm going to speak now specifically to people from, let's say, SADC. They don't feel, and I agree with them, that they should be forced to learn native South African languages just to get by. Because they can ask, but when Germans get here, you don't give them the same treatment. When French-speaking people come here, you don't give them the same treatment. Why me? Why must I be forced to get by? Otherwise, my life is in danger. Otherwise, you want to chase me out. But here in Joburg, you guys have French schools. You have German schools. You have Japanese schools. And those people get to live comfortably. The Jewish community, their kids speak English and Hebrew. They don't need to speak any other language. But because I'm from Zim, I must now learn isiZulu. Otherwise, there's something wrong with me. And that becomes a problem.
So that brings me to this question to say, would you say that the problem is with us as black people? Because as you mentioned right now, a German comes here and they don't have to go through.
They don't.
But us as black people. So would you say that we are the problem as a black nation?
My opinion.
Yeah.
Because I think it's incredibly complicated and very multi-layered. And a big part of the problem was colonialism, I have to be honest.
Mm.
because there was a way of living that black people had on the continent which worked for them.
Mm.
It included discrimination.
Mm.
It included territory. So we didn't have borders, but we had territories. This is Wapita. If you want to come here, you have to ask Inkosi Upita to allow you in. So we did have territories and we did have some form of discrimination. It may not have been as aggressive or as violent, and we weren't as exploitative and oppressive to a point where you will learn our languages, otherwise we will murder you,
mm-hmm.
arguably. Colonialism came and did a number on us. But where we are today, my answer is we lack good, visionary, strong black leaders who are actually going to sit their people down. To what you're saying,
mm.
We have devised this schooling system as the leadership to say children will learn these languages. You may not like it. This is why we're strong,
mm.
but we are good in the sense that we're trying to do the right thing and we have vision because we want Zulu children to be able to make money in the Northwest,
mm.
to be able to make money even in Botswana because they can now speak Setswana.
Mm.
We want Bapedi children to be able to make money in the Eastern Cape, to make money in KZN or Eswatini because we are teaching them Guni languages. That is vision. Because we don't have those leaders, instead we have leaders who are hell-bent on division because it's the only way they can retain power. This is now culturally, but we can even speak economically. When we speak monopolies, when we speak gatekeeping, compliance, regulation, a lot of it is hidden as, no, we're trying to serve the customer, we want to make sure that you're legit. But the reality is 90% of it is to ensure that we protect the people that are making money here.
Mm.
And the only way for you to make money is to go through this rigorous process and it's for you to pay us some money to belong to our club. Otherwise, you can't make money where we make money. And because we don't have the leaders that actually see at least South Africa as a so-called country, that see us as one nation, there is no plan to get people to actually understand your fellow brothers and sisters. Now, when you speak SADC as a region, we don't have Mnangagwa, Ramaphosa, and other leaders in the different countries who are actually going to sit and say, we're going to do, exchange programs. We want South African kids visiting Moz. We want South African kids visiting Namibia, visiting Botswana, so that they can come back and do cultural exchanges in the same way you want to visit Germany, you want to visit China, you want to visit, and you're like, oh, you know, I was in Argentina. We don't do that here because our leaders do not want us to actually get along. They love what's going on because it serves them and it gives them some power nyana.
Mm.
And it's only idiots like me and you who are actually genuinely interested in understanding different cultures and tribes.
Mm.
And who, when we've sat with different brothers and sisters, like, but we're the same. Why did I think you were different? And then you realize, oh, it's a cultural engineering by so-called leaders in the channels they use to be like, it's them. Abahambe.
Mm.
No, our borders. This is a black person speak about borders he didn't build between Musina and Zimbabwe, where the same family of Ndebele, same family, is split by a so-called border. And then we must be like, but you're not from here, you must leave. In the same, you're from Soweto originally.
Yeah.
In the same Soweto, it's a melting pot, not just of South Africans, but of people from SADC that came to Johannesburg to mine. From your Zimbabwe, from your Malawi, from your Zambia, they came here to mine before a border was built. And they built communities in the southwestern townships. And today, those same people are going to judge you. Where are you from? You're like, no, I'm from, when are you from Lesotho? You must go, you Zama Zama Zama. You're being told by someone who actually probably has Mozambican heritage, if they were to deep dive, who's probably got Botswana heritage, if they did a deep dive. But we're being hoodwinked. You spoke about our minds being enslaved. Mm. We're being hoodwinked to serve certain agendas.
Yeah.
And we're here today.
Yeah. And I like that you mentioned our mental slavery. For all those that follow you, they would know that you do speak openly about mental slavery and systems,
yeah.
right? Now, back to my question, what is really like true liberation looks like today for an African?
Jeez. That's a very difficult question. So I'll answer the first one you asked because I didn't answer and I apologize.
Yeah.
I think the number one illusion of freedom
Yeah.
Is that freedom is easy. Freedom is the most difficult option to choose. They normally put a meme of a lion in a cage at a zoo and then a lion in the wild. And they're like, which one would you choose to be? And people are like, I'd rather be a lion in the wild. They're lying.
Yeah.
The lion in the wild, if they didn't hunt today, if there's no prey, if there's no river, they die of hunger, starvation, dehydration. In the zoo, yes, you limited your movements and stuff, but you know you're going to eat.
You're fed.
You know you're safe. If someone breaks into the zoo, there's going to be people coming to protect you. We must preserve our lion. You get transported like VIP from one zoo to another. When you're sick, they bring a vet and they inject you, you know. People are lying. People want medical aid. People want private hospitals. People want private security. People want gated communities. People want Woolies food. People want their kids to live some type of comfortable life. They want the type of vaccines that are going to make sure that they're not sick. They want the type of government and the type of security that will keep them safe and secure.
Yeah.
They want to be free. Mm-hmm. Freedom is for a human being similar to living like a chimpanzee in the wild. No clothes.
Mm-hmm.
No nice school. No nice gun.
Mm-hmm.
No president or army to protect you. If there's no water, there's no water. There's no piped water for chimps. Chimps can't say, hey, let's go there. There's a water tank that the chimpanzee king built. There's no water tanks.
Mm-hmm.
There's no car. A chimp relies on their arms and their legs. If their arms and their legs are sore and tired, they're fucked. They don't have some nice train or some nice car that's going to drive them. They don't have grants.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have free healthcare. If you're sick as a chimp in the wild, you get infected, you die in real time. So true freedom is the hardest option to take. There's obviously levels. I gave two extreme examples, but there's levels. For me, it's the level of choosing to not be a chimpanzee. I want to be able to choose. But human beings are not given that choice.
Mm.
You can't go live in the wild. You can try, of course. But if ever someone finds you, they want to know, who are you? And you refuse to talk a language. Hey, Kuluma! Why must I be forced to speak English or Zulu? Where's your ID? What's your name? So all of these things, my name, my religious background, my nationality, you're forcing me to be part of some system. Today we're speaking digital IDs, which they're now rolling out in the UK.
Mm.
I have to belong to something. I must have a label. I must have a barcode somewhere. I can't just be a chimp jumping the Tanzanian border into Kenya. I can't. Mm. I can't be a bird that I know I'm just migrating to the south. Except when it's going to be summer there in the south, so we're migrating with the peeps.
Yeah.
You can't. You have to have a passport, get on a flight, pay your visa duty. We're not free, and I don't like that we don't have that option. There's the option to become rich, which comes with its own complexities, but the option to become a wild animal, we don't allow human beings to do that. Some do. They live in caves and they hide, but when they found, etc., they normally get punished or whatever the case may be, but it's not a real thing. But with that being said, the biggest illusion of freedom is that it's easy. Even at a surface level, when you choose to deviate, you get canceled on social media. You get attacked. I want to say something controversial, but not too controversial. Mm. This is very controversial, by the way, but it's legal. I am turning 40 next year.
Okay.
I can, at the age of 40, choose to sleep with a 16-year-old girl. Legally. The law allows that. Now, if we start a conversation around that, it upsets a lot of people.
Mm.
And I'll tell people, but it's the law. I'm being legal. Someone else, I go and I marry an 18-year-old girl.
Mm.
She can now sign a contract. And it's like, you're taking advantage of a young girl. I'm like, she's of legal age.
Mm.
You realize that our concept of right and wrong is not based on biology.
True.
It's not based on nature. It's not based on maturity or true consent. It's based on whoever decides to write the papers. And in other countries, you can marry as young as 12. It's legal there. We speak high and mighty of the South African constitution. But the same constitution has got certain laws which oppress and suppress and exploit certain people. What was legal prior was slavery and, you know, the exclusion of women. So, freedom, being independent of mind, even at a surface level, when you raise an idea, can get you canceled. You lose your job. People don't want to support you or whatever it is. And you're like, I was actually just saying something legal. I was, as a free man, I was saying, I want to marry a 17-year-old girl. And it's like, no, chief, we're never going to support your podcast ever again. And you're like, that's just me trying to be a little bit free. I'm not even being illegal. I'm not even rebelling. I'm within the law. But that already upsets a lot of people. The first one. The second one is, what does it mean? What does true liberation mean today as an African? We live in a globalized economy, a globalized world, which is hell-bent on the economy. And anyone who speaks freedom today is speaking economic, very sadly. And because they're speaking economic, they're speaking money, very sadly. And I say sadly because the economy and money are both very poisoned concepts. And because they speak economy and they speak money, they're speaking freedom to them means I am making more money than I need to get by in a way that requires the least amount of my time and my effort, even though it might be exploiting the time and effort of other people. That's what true freedom means in Africa. And when Africans speak about economic freedom and liberation for Africa, they don't know it. But what they're actually saying is, we would like to be rich while other countries are poor. That's actually what they want. And it's a concept that they see from China, America, Western Europe.
I want to ask you something, Penro. Looking at how, I'll say black people again, right? Looking at, we spoke about freedom right now, right? But personally, you, looking at how a black man is living today, right? Remember, freedom. Looking at how a black man is living today, would you say that we are still in chains, or we now became victim of our own laziness and we just got too comfortable?
You're asking rhetorical questions.
Making excuses for our own laziness. Are we making excuses for our own laziness?
That's a rhetorical question.
I see you, Penwell. I really want to hear your opinion on this. Like, genuinely, freedom, and here's a black man. And looking at how we're living today, are we really making, did we just get too comfortable making excuses for our own laziness?
I think human beings around the world are all very average and mediocre. And the reason certain countries thrive over others, and the reason certain communities thrive over others, is the quality of their leadership. And I think black people are where they are now because the quality of their leadership is poor. Now, I say this because I don't want to blame the individual black man, because the individual black man is similar to the individual Chinese man, the individual American, the individual Spaniard, Portuguese man, etc. The difference is the quality of their leadership. And where the black man finds himself today is with poor leadership, which is why he is now swimming in laziness and entitlement, because he's got the type of leadership that is selling that concept to him. He doesn't have a sense of ownership of himself, of his family, and of his destiny.
That's powerful.
I'd like to hear your answer, because I know you're asking a rhetorical question. It sounds like you don't think we're mentally enslaved anymore.
I might be hated for what I'll say. But I feel like we are in a society that doesn't deal well with the truth. And yes, you're right. It was a rhetorical question. Right? Now, you want to know my opinion. I feel like we do have a painful history that happened. Black people suffered a lot, right? And I'm not taking away none of that.
Sure.
Accountability and whatsoever, that has to be taken. But again, if I'm going to look at the South African history, it's been over 30 years now. And someone else, yes, will come and say, yeah, but you're saying 30 years, but 30 years is nothing compared to what has happened.
400, 500 years
of slavery. Do you understand?
Yeah.
Fair. Fair. But we humans, we evolving. We have this 30 years.
Mm.
You know, I cannot be making excuses for 30 years.
Mm.
A person can change their mentality and develop in 1 year.
Our black politicians within this 30-year framework became very rich and their kids went to private schools. So when you speak 30 years, why does it not apply to them?
No, and I'm coming there.
Yeah.
We're actually going to touch on that.
Yeah.
I like the fact that we're really going to dive into that. But I just want to answer this mental thing. I feel like sometimes we also want to be spoon-fed. You know?
We or our leaders want to spoon-feed
us? Our people.
The individual man?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, I will make an example. As you go to Mozambique, right? There's no, what's this thing? What do they call it?
Grants?
Yeah, but you will never hear such.
It's because you guys are poor.
Listen, but hear my point.
I'm kidding.
Yeah, but hear my point, right? There's no such, right? These free housing, there's no such, right? You come to South Africa, and that's probably one of another reason why people are flooding in.
Sure.
Do you understand?
A lot of freebies.
Thank you. That's the better word. There's a lot of freebies going on. You know, I'm not saying that they're the best, but the government is trying. If you want to see that the South African government is trying, compared with other African governments,
100%,
then you will see. Take an ordinary South African man who's complaining about the stuff that he's already receiving this side,
sure,
and throw him in Mozambique, throw him in Zimbabwe.
He'll see flames.
He's going to come back in a split second.
Sure.
Do you understand? But that's what I'm trying to say. To say sometimes I feel like we are making excuses for our own laziness. You know, we do have opportunities, but we complain without even reaching out to them.
True.
Because we want those opportunities to come and knock on our doors.
Mm.
And that's not going to happen if we don't put ourselves out there.
100%.
So for me, I'm not taking away the history. I'm not taking away the painful events that happened. But I'm also about people taking accountability for their own lives as well.
Sure.
Like I said, a man can transform in 90 days. There are books like 90 days. You can really transform how you think. You start by reading a book. You start going to gym. You can really transform.
It takes one decision.
Thank you. Thank you. Now, is there anything else you want to say to what I just said?
Everything you said is fine. I just want to defend.
Okay.
Why South Africans get freebies. I hate them, by the way. I think we should scrap grants, RDPs, etc., because I think they cause more psychological harm than what they do. But the reason we have them, for people that don't understand, and this is important for the African continent as a whole. Colonial settlers came to South Africa in particular, and they built a lot of wealth, exploiting black labor and exploiting resources that were owned on the land that black people settled on. And this is a form of reparations. Black South Africans may not even see it that way. But it's to say, if the mines and the mining bosses made so much money and black people didn't benefit, please, can you pay us back? And the pay you back is you now have free houses. You now have grants, which it's obviously a retrospective and giving it to people prospectively. But it's meant to be a form of reparations. And it becomes sad to me that countries like the DRC, Nigeria, Angola, I'm just thinking of some of the resource-rich nations.
Yeah.
It's sad that even with the history that they have and the fact that they have black governments today, they don't have those programs, considering how wealthy those countries are. And I'm not saying they must implement it. I don't believe in that stuff. I actually believe that those things must be earned. I think the people that are actually working and hustling today, for example, yourself, if you're showing an intent to work, government should then give you a free house to say, since you're already working, here's a place to operate from. since you're already hustling, here's free transport. Since you're, it can't just be just because you have an ID, you know, and then you must also prove, they must track that now that you have a free house, are you employing people? How many people are living there? Now that we've given you a grant, how are you a present father and actually helping your child to develop? So it must be an earned. And because it's not earned, it creates the spoon feeding culture, which then destroys people psychologically. But the concept of it is something that the whole of Africa should say. Since we are so rich in oil, gas, hard commodities, how are we benefiting in Zimbabwe with our gold? How are we benefiting? You don't have to build us a free house, but government can say, here are workstations where you guys have free Wi-Fi, free internet, free computers. We're going to allow you guys to export like in China for free. If you're a Zimbabwean, you can export for free. We will give you guys labor. We will give you tractors. We will give you to show that we're giving back from what was taken. But of course, because you've got poor leadership that is captured, we find ourselves here.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk a bit about business. Your business journey is one of interest, right? You even wrote a book about how you made and lost your millions. But for me, I'm more interested in the mindset, right, of rebuilding. After losing everything, that mindset of rebuilding, how do you rebuild after losing everything?
I'm a bad example, so I'll give you a generic answer.
Yeah.
For people that fail, whether in business or even in employment, you know, sometimes you get retrenched. It's not by choice. I always ask people to go back to the beginning. You know, you existed before you had a business. You existed before you had a job, and you weren't dying, we hope. You weren't suffering.
True.
So if you can go back to where you were to say, you know, I had dreams. I worked hard. I went to school. I applied. That same thing that drove you to go and raise funding, to go and get a lease, to go and put your CV in. Go back to that. Go back to the beginning. And then find yourself in there, because that's the power you need to show your resilience to bounce back. In my case, I'm extremely privileged. I'm multi-skilled. I'm multi-talented. I've got a great family network. I've got a great business network. I was never going to struggle. And the reason I went into business was not because of survival. So my story is very unique. I was working at a very popular, huge bank in the country at the time. One of the biggest banks on the continent. So I had a nice, comfortable salary. I had already written books. I was selling my books. I had done some TV work. I was still doing some TV work. I was doing speaking engagements. I was selling T-shirts. I've got a family, you know, that lives relatively okay. I have friends. I've got qualifications from universities that are well recognized. I'm not too bad looking from a societal perspective. I speak relatively well. I can do so many things. I'm able-bodied, you know. I can do so much. So I'm extremely privileged. So even when my businesses failed, and because I wasn't doing them for survival, I wasn't now living in a shack. Like, where am I going to find my next meal? I was always comfortable. So even when I fell on comfort. That's why my story is not the greatest for the average person. But it is still a relevant story to say you can bounce back.
Yep.
And the other reason my story is not the greatest story is because I didn't fail in a business like a fish and chip shop, and then tell the story of how I rebuilt my fish and chip shop. A lot of the businesses where I failed, I left them and I did something else, which becomes the curse of having multiple opportunities and options. Generally, you'd actually want someone to fail in a business and then to rebuild themselves in the same business, which I could do. But the reason I didn't, outside of having opportunities, is because entrepreneurship for me is a personal development journey. Self-development. It's who am I? And you do all these things. You do manufacturing in Germiston. You run a podcast in Randburg. You work in corporate. You might think you're trying to make money or you're trying to build a, you're actually trying to find yourself.
True.
Once you find yourself, you will collapse everything. You'll collapse the business in Germiston. You'll collapse the podcast. You're like, I found my calling. My calling was teaching. And my calling was maybe to unite or to build a bridge between Mozambique and South Africa. And I'm not going to spend the rest of my life building exchange programs, tourism programs, industrializing Mozambique, ensuring that there's great economic exchange, teaching Portuguese in South Africa, teaching English in Mozambique. I found my calling. I went around doing all these things. And the thing that was actually, when I look at myself and what I've been doing, it was all that. So it was that for me. And that's why I'm here, because I think education for me and lighting up minds and liberating minds is my true calling. Yeah.
And I appreciate how you answered that question, because that's the main reason why I'm asking this, to say, you know, there's a lot of people that they fall, right? After being at the top, yeah, you fall down and they just can't find a way to say, how am I going to come back from this? How do you rebuild?
Yeah.
So that kind of mindset, and not necessarily to rebuild in the same space that you were in, but venturing into other things. That's why I wanted to say, what's the mindset that's required for that? And you mentioned something about purpose, you know, finding your purpose, which I want to know, can you separate purpose from money?
100%. Money is not real. Value is real. Money, at least modern money as we know it, is a formalized concept which by and large has been made very, very famous, popular by the Rothschild banking in the dynasty of Europe. Money was meant to be, or it's meant to be, a medium of exchange. So I want something from you, you want something from me. So money comes in the center of that, because I don't want the sheep that you're carrying and you don't want the maize that I have. And it's meant to be a store of value. So instead of keeping 50,000 cows, you have money which represent 50,000 cows. And then last but not least, it's meant to be a unit of account. This 10 rand note or this $10 is meant to represent something. Money doesn't do that anymore. It is manipulated by the people that run the global economy. At any given time when people are making some type of progress, even in terms of value, they devalue money through inflation. We have shrinkflation today, where what used to be a 500 milliliter bottle is now 300 milliliters, but at the same price, if not more. We've got interest, which is a crazy concept when you think about it, because nature doesn't grow and add value at the level of interest. So when I charge you interest, I'm actually expecting you to do more than what's realistic in society, which also steals money from you. Purpose is natural. Purpose lies in value. I come to your house and I wash your car. I help your son with his maths homework. I help in your garden. I've provided value. You do not need to pay me in money. I do not need to quantify the value I've added in money. We can quantify it in the things that I did. So that when you come to my house, you can wash my car. You can help my daughter with her science homework. You can come and work in my livestock pen. That's value. There was no money discussed. Value is the concept we're meant to get towards, but this requires a shift of the mindset. Because as long as we think in the form of money, we are playing within a system that we don't control. It's one of the biggest ways that Africa gets colonized and enslaved. And it's one of the ways that if you can mentally liberate people, Africans in particular, will become wealthy tomorrow. We have children right now. I specifically mentioned children who are creating the most amazing content on TikTok today. They dance. They create comedy skits. They share information. It is brilliant. It is beautiful. But TikTok is not paying South African creators. Now, once South African creators understand the value they're creating, they can come together and say, you know, we've created so much value on TikTok. If we were to assign a monetary value, if we were based in America or the UK, this is how much we'd make. We are going to decide on our own to take our value and put it on a different platform and get off TikTok. Or we will tell TikTok, look, we're happy to move here because we don't think you guys value us. And even when we move to another platform, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, whatever the case may be, when we go there, we say, listen, we'd like to have a meeting with YouTube South Africa, with Instagram Global. We would like to get paid for our value. We see you guys sell ads on the platforms. We are moving from TikTok to come to you as an entire South African content creation space. And they're like, oh, no problem. We'll pay you at this rate. No, no, we don't want your money. What do you want? Our value is in cattle. We would like Instagram to give us this many cattle every time we do this. No, but we can't do that. We can do money. You can take your money. Go and buy cows wherever you want to buy them and then bring them to us. You do that. Even if it's at a lower rate than you guys are paying now, we're happy. We want cattle. What's going to happen as time goes on is a couple of things. Number one, your cattle are going to breed and multiply. Unlike your money that sits in the bank, which gets eroded by bank charges, inflation. Mm. Number two, as time goes on, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, whatever, they're going to say, we were paying you guys 5 cows last year. We can't pay you 5 cows this year. The economy has changed. Cows are more expensive. We're like, we told you, we don't want money. We want cows. Because we've realized that you guys are criminals. You guys want to pay us in money, which next year is worth less. In 10 years is worth less for the same value that we're creating. We don't want that anymore. We want fair value. So purpose is not tied to money. Or rather, it should not be tied to money. It should be tied to value. There are many people who are living their purpose who struggle to align purpose to value, and they get exploited by people who play the money game or people who play the value game. No, but I'm giving you shelter. You're giving me shelter, which is a natural concept, but you've told me shelter costs money, it costs rent and a bond. No. No.
Building our own economy.
If you want to call it an economy, it's a psychological construct, to be fully honest.
How does that look like practically if we were to put it in action to say we want to action building our own economy?
It takes a group with a vision and good leadership to define their own currency. Once you've defined your currency, then you tell the rest of the world, this is what we want to be paid in.
Yeah. What's your philosophy on wealth? Is money true freedom, or another form of, what can I say, another form of control?
I think Robert Kiyosaki, if I stand to be corrected, I think Robert Kiyosaki's got the best definition for wealth, and his definition is based on time. Wealth is not based on money or amount. It's based on time. And it's not how much free time you have per se, but it's how much free time you can have that doesn't require you to work for your cost of living. So if you don't have to work for the next 30 days a month, but you can still live at a quality of life that you like, the house that you're in, the car that you drive, the food that you eat, etc., you have 1 month of wealth. Whether that's being paid for by your employees or by your share portfolio or by rental income or by royalties you get from a book, that's up to you. But the bottom line is you don't have to work for your lifestyle for a month. So when we speak generational wealth, we're normally speaking, you have assets, share portfolios, intellectual property that generates so much value that pays for your life, that can sustain you without needing to work physically for the rest of your life, for the rest of your children's lives, etc. It's easier to quantify in money and numbers, but essentially a true wealth is time for me. Look, money is a great concept. I won't lie. It's the easiest concept. But the problem is there are people that have poisoned it where sometimes even when you're making an advance and you're progressing, they play around with it so that your Zim dollar becomes worth nothing. And you're like, but we're still mining. We're still working. We're still sweating. We're still harvested. But you're telling me my Zim dollars in the bank are worthless today. That's a psychological trick. That's not real.
I love how you put it, that wealth is time. Because even if you think about in reverse, without time, you can't create wealth.
Zero.
So wealth is time.
everything that people call the creation of wealth is you taking other people's time. Whether it's in your company working for you, whether it is customers that are buying from you, they had to go and make money somewhere else using their time to come buy from you. Whether it's people creating content online using their time to generate value for you. The number one commodity that we have more than anything besides our body and our mind is our time. You can have all the money in the world. I will give you $100 billion. I'll give you $500 billion. You'll be worth as much as Elon Musk. But I'll give it to you at age 99, sitting in a wheelchair in drips at ICU.
Now that
wealth, here's your money.
That wealth now becomes worthless.
Worthless.
Ah. Wow. That's powerful. I want to ask you something. Let's just take it back a bit. I know we touched base a bit on this, but I just want to hear your thought on this. We spoke a bit about freedom. Now, remember when I said we're going to touch base on leadership?
Yeah.
Now, this country is being led by obviously black people, right? So now, when you personally look at the state of this country, the economy, the crime, the leadership, right? Does that reflect who we are as black people?
Yes.
How so?
The leaders that run South Africa are a reflection of the people that they're leading. We have got very talented people in this country, very talented, of all races, black, white, colored, Indian. Those are the generic ones. Most of the talented people are too scared to stand up. And because they're scared to stand up and maybe run for government or build a business, it's okay. They must stay in their corners with their intelligence and their integrity. No one cares. You and your great ideas, if you're scared of being shot and killed, it's okay. Carry on hiding. It's fine. The people that run the country are brave. A lot of them, sadly, are stupid. They don't have vision and they're greedy. But they represent the average, at least today, South African who is a criminal and who is stupid in the spaces they're in. These are people that bribe traffic cops, speeding. These are people that when they are school teachers are stealing stationery, taking it to their children. These are people that when they work as nurses and doctors in public clinics and hospitals are stealing medicine. These are people that they meant to knock off at 5. They knock off at 3. So they're stealing 2 hours where they're meant to be serving people. These are people that are sitting at Home Affairs and taking bribes to sell IDs and pretending like the system is offline so that someone can pay them. These are people that lie on affidavits at police stations because they're trying to get a payout. They're bribing cops so that they can get a RAF payout. There are people who are selling illicit cigarettes, alcohol, people that are selling expired goods, people that are fully aware that their family members are criminals, but they protect them. This is the fabric of South African society today. The average South African is not innocent. So it becomes very hypocritical, and it's cool for us to criticize the politicians, but where a politician has access to 500 million and they steal it, you have access to 50,000. You have access to 500 rand and you steal it. You're stealing at the level of your opportunity.
Yeah.
And I can tell you now, if you were there at the highest levels, your family members would be getting tenders. Your friends would be paying you bribes. You'd be sleeping with the varsity girls and taking them overseas because that's who you are. But for the people that are not doing that, the small percentage, they're scared, they're cowards. And because they're scared cowards, they must stay in their pub corners and watch the country burn.
Would you say it's them being cowards or it's the repercussions of speaking out or trying to make a change?
That's being cowardly. It's the bottom line.
But you can look at what's happening with the Madlanga Commission.
Yes.
Right? So if I'm just one man,
yes,
that's trying to do good.
Yes.
In a room filled with powerful, corrupt people.
Yes.
right? And the good that I'm trying to do is for the better of the nation.
Yes.
But the very same nation not backing me up.
Yes.
Do you think I will still have the courage to proceed this fight if the people that I'm fighting for are like,
I like the fact that you use the word courage. You won't have the courage. You'll become a coward. You'll become scared and you'll get out. It's not even a bad thing. It's a smart thing. Get out of there because you'll get killed. You are stupid for being there. My biggest thing in this country and maybe around the world is countries are run by stupid people. I don't know if you agree or not. Do you agree?
I do.
Okay.
I do. And I'll tell you why, but proceed.
No, please go for it.
Look, for me, actually, I'm not even going to blame the leaders that much.
Okay.
Right? I blame us, the voters.
Yeah.
Right? Because we put these people into power.
Yeah.
Right? And remember what I said about 30 years?
Yes.
How many terms of selecting a president in that 30 years? 5 years, 5 years, right?
Sure.
And even though they fail us, we are aware of what they do.
Yes.
We still put them there.
This is why I said the leadership is a reflection of the people.
Then me and you are in agreement.
You agree that the leaders are stupid?
They are.
Okay.
They are. And let me quickly just explain why I say that. Because when you lead, you are there to serve.
Supposed to.
Right?
Yeah.
But now if you're going to steal from the very same people that you meant to serve, that's stupidity. And at the same time, you make it obvious. Our leaders, they have no shame. They make it obvious when they steal. When you tune into the news and you hear the ridiculous amount that are disappearing, you're like,
and the things they buy that everyone can see.
No, makungathiwa uyadlusule kodwa kanje.
Sure.
Do you understand? So if you say to me, are they stupid? I'm like, I didn't say it, but their actions are telling me that they're stupid.
My challenge to... Is it a challenge? It's not a challenge. We have a lot of smart people in this country.
Mm.
Good people who should be in leadership.
Mm.
Maybe this is a challenge. My challenge to them is, if you're so smart, why are you struggling to outsmart dumb people? This goes to this thing of what you're saying about courage and cowardice. I'm like, if you're that brilliant, then prove it. Build an army. Dismantle these guys. They're idiots. They want Lamborghinis and young girls. They get drunk and they wear Gucci. They're clowns. You're smart. You well-studied, well-traveled. So brilliant. Prove it. Why are you being outmaneuvered by dumb idiots? Maybe you're not that smart. Because there's a solution for every problem. We had the ex-CEO of Eskom, Andre de Ruyter, during the worst period of load shedding that we've had as a country. He wrote a book, he did an interview, and the things he was highlighting was that there are mafias running Eskom. Coal mafia, tender mafia, diesel mafia, etc. Mm. Right? And he said, this is why I can't help, why I can't serve, why I can't deliver power. And in my head, I was like, then you must be removed, the CEO. And people are like, but how can he do his job? You know the mafias. I'm like, the reason he is there is to get rid of the mafias. If he's not smart enough, strong enough, violent enough to get rid of the mafias, then he's not the right person to be there.
Mm.
It's really as simple as that. You call me to come and sort out crime in your area. And I'm like, hey, but there's lots of criminals here, Vic. What do you expect me to do? Oh, you can't sort it out? Leave. Let's get the guy
who's going to get it done,
who can do the things. And Jordan Peterson speaks about a good man is not a harmless man. A good man is a dangerous man who keeps it under voluntary control.
Mm.
You must be able to enact violence at the same, probably at a more extreme level than bad people, to actually be a good person. And we see this every day in superhero movies.
Mm-hmm.
Superheroes are superheroes, not because they go and they sit down and they negotiate with the bad guys. Guys, look, but you're destroying the country and Spider-Man is there. No, but, and Captain America's there. And you know, the Black Panther's like, come on, you are destroying. these guys have a set of skills which include extreme violence. And they are more violent, Iron Man, than the bad guys.
Mm.
Batman outroots corruption in Gotham City because he's more violent than... The criminals are scared of him. Now, when we speak about Mkhwanazi in KZN and Nkabi being gunned down, you're like, hey, Pelatina, we're scared of Nkabis.
True.
And Nkabis are scared of Mkhwanazi. Hey, Baba.
Yeah.
So, good, strong, visionary people must be able to prove that they are smarter than dumb people.
Mm.
And then additionally, they must prove that they are more violent than dumb people. So if it's like, hey, Ntwana, I can't get into politics. Hey, Pela, they kill you there for tenders. It's like, okay, then kill them back. Mm. No, but you can't do that. I'm like, okay, then don't do it. Go sit in your 9-to-5, hit potholes, sit in the dark, don't have water. It's okay, my man. I know it's dangerous. Don't do it. But for the guys who think they are like Mkhwanazi, go do it. Because that's what it takes.
Yeah. I think this radio station that I always tune into, I think there's a caller, even the host said it, to say, rather let the country burn so we can rebuild it again.
And that's fear. That, yeah, when the country burns, nothing's going to get better. Criminals are going to come back and run it.
But I think... At the point that we're at, that's what we need. We need to rebuild. We need a fresh start. And how do we get that fresh start? It's cleaning everything that we know. That's why I say we need to unlearn certain things to learn.
The criminals will come back and run, though. That I can guarantee you. Criminals have got experience in bravery and getting things done. The country will burn. The guys who burnt it will be there. And the guys who burnt it when it's time to rebuild the country will be there again.
It's a topic for another day.
Sure.
This one. Now, there's something also that really, 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 really caught my attention and that I'm very much interested in. And you're even wearing the t-shirt.
Oh, yes.
Pennualism. You founded your own belief system. Mm. And I did my bit digging to it. And I must say, I'm very much intrigued. What was your true motive, like your motive towards this? What were you trying to achieve? Or what are you actually trying to achieve?
Yuval Noah Harari, an Israeli author, has written a couple of really dope books, and he gives a TED Talk. And in the TED Talk, he explains why human beings run the world and not other animals. And the main thing he highlights is that human beings, unlike most other animals, live in two realities. A fictional reality and an objective reality. The objective reality are the things we see. The mountains, the trees, the food, the building, you know, real things. A fictional reality is your imagination. Mm. Part of our fictional reality is our countries. Countries are not real. You can't touch or eat or bite a country. Someone decided to create it in our minds. I am South African. Mm. Money is a fictional reality. And he uses the example of chimpanzees, that if you gave a chimpanzee money in exchange for bananas, they'd look at you like you're crazy. They're like, I'm not going to fucking do that. I'm not going to work here for a piece of paper. We are lying. And human beings are given other fictional realities in the form of religion. If you behave and you do well, one day you will, you know, thrive in heaven, in the afterlife.
Mm.
Because we have imagination and we have stories and we have language that we can use to co-opt each other into these fictional realities.
Mm.
The biggest fight in the world is not really for land, even though that's what's documented. It's not for commodities, even though that's what's documented.
Mm.
The biggest fight globally and even historically has been for psychological control.
Mm.
Once I can control your mind, I can make you believe a Zim dollar is worth nothing. I can make you believe that Bitcoin is worth $20,000. I can make you believe that you are not South African because of a passport or an ID. Mm. I can make you believe that women are a lesser class. I can make you believe there's something wrong with gays. I can believe that Nigerians are drug dealers because I control your mind. I control the narrative within your mind, propaganda. And Hollywood is one of the greatest tools of propaganda ever created. They normally credit Joseph Goebbels for the propaganda of Nazi Germany with Hitler. But globally today, Hollywood is phenomenal. And outside of Hollywood is social media, which has algorithms which prime and ignite what the agenda should be, which is why they'll also take down videos that are not in line with yeah. the story. From birth, the software that runs our mind is programmed by the elite, and the biggest part of that is religion. What religious group you are born into almost sculpts everything about how you view the world, from the language you speak, Arabic or Hebrew, to the food you eat. I won't eat this because it's haram. I won't eat this because it's not kosher. To the people you chill with, to the countries you pay homage and lineage and assimilate to, Israel or the Middle East. All of this is because of your religious beliefs. The girl you choose to be with or the boy you choose to be with, the way you raise your children has to be around the Quran or the Torah or Buddhist principles, etc. And so many things have changed in the world, from the clothes we wear to the food we eat to the way we engage technology.
Sure.
But the software that defines how we exist is thousands of years old. And not a lot of people are challenging that. It's blasphemous. You can change your clothing. You don't dress the way Jesus did or Prophet Muhammad,
yeah.
peace be upon him. You don't live the way Buddha did. You use a cell phone. You live in a time of LGBTQI+, where women are liberated and. But your belief system is 2,000, 4,000 years old. Hinduism. So I was like, this is a space where this hasn't really been challenged as much. So why not me?
Mm.
Peter Thiel has a book called 0 to 1. He is a dollar billionaire in America. He's one of the tech billionaires, being part of the PayPal mafia with Elon Musk and Reid Hoffman. And in his book, 0 to 1, he speaks about if you want to become rich, you have to build a monopoly. And you want to build a monopoly in a space that is not as challenged, not as saturated. When I look at all the spaces and the industries in the world that are being challenged, you know, I mean, even Jeff Bezos is trying to do the let's go into outer space with Elon Musk and SpaceX. But not a lot of people are trying to redefine religion. Where do we come from? Why are we here? Where are we going? Is there a God? Are we here because of the Big Bang?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, why not me? And pendulism becomes my business, becomes my experiment, social experiment. It becomes my contribution to the world to say, why can't we come up with something new? When Jesus Christ was alive, he came up with something new. He wasn't there to spread Judaism as a Jewish man.
Mm.
He came and he came with a new way of being. He said, I'm Jesus' son. Jesus wants us to, I'm God's son. God wants us to live this way, to spread peace and truth and love. He was crucified for his beliefs. He was rebellious. He was a free thinker. And he was crucified in real time. That thing of being courageous as a leader. He did the uncomfortable stuff. And today, he has the biggest movement, at least from a software perspective, which is Christianity.
True.
So I'm like, why not me? Why can't I create my own? Jesus did it.
Yeah.
Buddha did it. He also broke away from his beliefs. Prophet Muhammad was the embodiment of what God, Allah, wanted. So why not me? Abraham did it. Why not me? So that's what pendulism is. It's me saying, I'm living in a different time. And I'm saying, here's a belief system that speaks to our time. In future, there will be another person like me, just as there were people before me. But it can't be that everything in our lived reality has changed except for our beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
I want them to change, and pendulism principles is that.
And how has your understanding of God and spirituality evolved since then?
I believe God is consciousness. I believe nothing exists without you. The world was created by you being conscious. There was no world before that. There was no world before that. Mm. All that you call history and it's your creation.
Yeah.
The day your consciousness ceases to exist, we call that death.
Mm.
The world will disappear. You created it. It's yours. We're just here for your amusement and entertainment.
And do you believe religion still serves society, or it's holding people back?
For 90% of society, religion is still the best model to choose. And I wish more people could fully plug into the majority religions,
the big boys.
A very good way of living. It serves the rich, of course, and the powerful. Yeah. And for the average coward, the average scared person who's just trying to live a good life, it's a really good model to follow. But for the people who are different, for the leaders, for the innovators, for the most of them just become atheist. But there are different ways of living. And if not following me, I suggest people that are different go look up something called scientism. Not Scientology of L. Ron Hubbard.
Scientism.
Yeah. They can go and research it. It's a belief system.
Okay.
It's a way of processing where we come from, why we're here, where we're going, and what we should be doing with our lives.
I like that. But where do we then draw the line between faith and people actually taking responsibility for their own lives?
What's faith?
You know, I'll make a quick example. Thanks for asking that.
Yeah.
I'll make a quick example, right? And I was just telling someone the other day, not so long ago, to say, you can pray, right? 365 days, in the valley, room.
Sure.
And pray, right? Nonstop. 300, yeah. Please hear me. Pray 365 days and even fast on top of that.
Yes. Yeah.
In that room. But if you don't go out there, nothing will change.
Sure.
Uthandazile ufastile njalo. Because what that prayer did, you just fought your spiritual battle, but not this worldly battle that you are in now. And unfortunately, God blesses your hands. Now, if you don't go out there and put yourself in positions where opportunities can find you, how do you expect something to change? So, and I feel like that's the problem that we have, especially in the townships.
Sure.
You get people praying, committing, you know, devoting themselves, putting their sacrificing everything.
Yeah.
But they don't want to work.
Sure.
So that's what brings this question to say, do you think like it's holding them back or what's the line? People need to wake up and take responsibility of their own life. Yes, you've prayed. You are now a warrior in spirit.
Yes.
Now you need to walk.
Oh, prayer warrior.
You know?
We are a majority Christian country, as far as I know.
Yeah.
And any specifically black person and any poor person who claims to be Christian must consult their Bible, because their Bible speaks about action. You can't just be praying. There's no God, the big boys, like I said, the major religions. There's no God who's comfortable to say, just pray your problems away. All of them prescribe action.
Thank you.
All of them prescribe action. With that being said, I also have to defend people that pray, because I'm not spiritual like them. I don't believe in what they believe in. But for many of them, the prayer brings to them amkwanas. The prayer to them brings a Nelson Mandela and a Oliver Reginald Tambo. The prayer to them brings a Peter and a Penel to come in and educate them and liberate them. They're like, this is what I prayed for. You guys are here now. The prayer for them brings them the freebies, the RTP houses and the grants. So they believe that works. But if they're going to say that is because they are Christian or Muslim or Jewish or Rasta, they're talking rubbish, because those belief systems believe very much in work. They say that Mkwanazi will come. Your prayer worked. God has delivered Mkwanazi. But then God demands you to work. That means go and fight in Mkwanazi's army. Go and hold politicians accountable. Stop voting for the guys you voted for. Go and pay taxes so that you can keep getting the RTP houses. Go and send your kids to school to learn. Go and acquire skills. Because all the gods you pray to believe in action and work. So you can't just say, but I prayed there. There is no God. The same Jesus you pray was walking around doing acts of service. And if you claim to believe in Jesus and you're not doing that, you're a fake Christian. You're a fake. I'm telling you now, you're a fake Christian, and you are desecrating your beliefs, and you're a horrible ambassador for what you claim to stand for. If you are a true Christian, number one, you wouldn't judge other people, regardless of their beliefs. Number two, you'd be able to sit with canceled people, because Jesus Christ did it. He sat with people that were deemed dodgy in society. And then you'd have to do acts of service. At no point did Jesus say, sit and stare up in the sky and pray and hope that things will... No ways. So you're lying. And you're spreading lies to other people that are meant to be holding your faith to account.
Those with ears will hear. Those with ears will definitely hear. Now let's bring it home now. You a father, right? What does this fatherhood mean to you?
They call it a feminist today. I believe that men and women are equal.
Yep.
What that means is fatherhood to me is parenthood.
Yeah.
So whether you have a penis or a vagina or breasts, high testosterone, high estrogen, children need guidance. Mm. And you must guide your children to the best of your ability.
Yeah.
And where your ability is lacking, maybe you're not good at nurturing, man or woman. Maybe you're not good at provision, man or woman. Maybe you're not good at protection. Your responsibility is then to go out there and find the people or the resources to fill in that gap for your kids, whether it's a teacher or a coach or a husband or a stepfather, stepmom, your sister, your friends, your neighbors, to help raise this child.
Wow.
Because the child is useless, helpless, and our job as a parent is to try and instill values, skills, resources and opportunities and networks in this child so that they can thrive even when we're not there.
True. I fully agree. Would you say that being a father, I know with me, it changed how I view the world.
Sure.
Did it do the same to you? Would you say that?
No. Not at all. I was born to be a father. I always knew I was going to have children, and I was excited when I was going to have children, and having children didn't change my worldview at all. If anything, it helped me double down on some of the things that I knew. But I will tell you that being a parent has given me a lot of life experience and influenced me in many ways.
Yeah.
Not changed me, but influenced me in many ways. Very positively, very aggressively. My views on parenting are incredibly alternative. And society would not like them at all. But it goes back to what I was saying. We're trying to raise little people into becoming the best version of themselves. And the way we're doing it now, and the institutions and platforms we have been given, are doing the opposite of that. We're actually destroying them. That's why we have 25-year-old, 40-year-old children who are useless, who can't do for self.
How do you... Yeah, that's a powerful one. How do you suggest that we teach our children about money, work, and purpose?
The short answer is apprenticeship. Your children must spend time with people that are thriving in spaces to learn from seeing and then to be given a chance to try the things that they're doing and do as much of that as possible with as many different skilled people as possible from as young an age as possible. And allow them to find themselves. Apprenticeship. If we can actually go back to what apprenticeship was. Patrice Motsepe started working in his father's businesses from age 6. That is called child labor, legally. But he was apprenticing. He was learning how to work in businesses. Indian kids do that in their parents' businesses. Jewish kids do the same as well. It's deemed, let children be children. I don't know what the hell that means, but I know that it's not in the spirit of what kids want to do. Children can play in a business. Children will sing and dance while they are doing work. There's always time for that. But they must learn the skills and they must take responsibility for their lives. And we're not doing that. But the short answer is apprenticeship. And it doesn't have to be the parents. Many parents do not have the skills, so we can't blame them. But they must go and find the people with skills, whether it's a school teacher or a business owner to say, I would like my child to come and work under you, even if you don't pay them. Because there's something you have that we admire, that I'd like my child to take on from you. Apprenticeship.
Wow. I like that. Do you ever feel lonely, considering how you think? Do you ever feel lonely as a thinker in a society that often prefers comfort over truth?
There are many lonely times. Many. Even in entrepreneurship, it can be very lonely. But thanks to the internet and social media, and thanks to the fact that I have a big mouth, I've attracted so many brilliant people. I'd be lying if I said I was lonely. I've got the curse of having too many brilliant, alternative, independent thinkers. But when you are alone, I wouldn't call it lonely. It's alone time. Hey, I'd be lying, man. There are so many different people out there. It's not lonely. There are so many crazy people out there. And we're good. And we're winning. And we're thriving.
But what if crazy is not crazy? What if what we deem as crazy
is actually not? It's really not.
Sure. Now, when your name is mentioned 100 years from now, what do you hope people say about you?
I hope I become a mythical figure, like your Jesuses of this world. My favorite human being, to be honest, is actually Leonardo da Vinci, funny enough. And I hope my life can, and my name can, live for as long as possible. There's an animated movie called Coco, where they speak about the three deaths. I just don't remember them. I know I'm going to talk rubbish and I apologize, but people can go in and research.
Yeah.
But it's got something to do with I'm sorry if I'm wrong.
Yep.
I might be making this up. Your first death is accepting or figuring out what your purpose is.
Yeah.
So when they call a rebirth, being born again, it's when you realize this is my purpose. Mm-hmm. So you die. It's a figurative, metaphoric death.
Yeah.
I'm no longer the Peter I used to be, this dizzy young boy who wants to have all the honeys.
Yeah.
I am now the guy who's rooted in my purpose.
Okay.
So I'm born again. So that's the first death. The material, the...
Yeah, that one even in the Bible, something similar to that in the Bible, it's there, yeah.
The second one is the physical death, where your body dies.
Mm.
Your spirit might carry on living if you believe in that, but your body dies, will put you in the ground.
Yeah.
Then the third death is when the last person who has a memory of you dies. That means no one knows about you now anymore. So we've got Bob Marley, Michael Jackson, Mother Teresa, Martin Luther King Jr., Mahatma Gandhi, you know, your Jesus Christ, all these guys. Their names still live. So they still live. The day people don't know them, like, do you know Timbuktu? Like, who's that? And you travel the whole world and no one knows. Then if ever there was such a person, they then... So I'm hoping that my name echoes, as they say in Gladiator, echoes into an eternity for as long as possible. Just as someone who came here, switched his mind on as much as they could and tried to light the candle of as many people as possible. To find their consciousness and the gods within themselves, and made a decent impact in life at a time when it looked like the world was sort of dying down mentally.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I have to ask you this, man. What's the most urgent mindset shift you think South Africans need urgently?
I'm trying to think of good English. I don't know what the English is.
Yeah.
What South Africans need urgently is to have all the freebies taken away. Doing that alone will force their minds to shift. I know there's a nice way to put it, but the fact that we live in a country where you can get so many free things without being expected to be responsible for them is part of what's causing the destruction of people's minds. I sit with the leader of the ACDP, the African Christian Democratic Party, Reverend Kenneth Mshwe, and we spoke about the Bill of Rights in South Africa, a right to education, a right to health, a right. We need a Bill of Responsibilities. I have a right to education. I have a responsibility to help build a school, to help teach others what I know, to show up when people are teaching, to donate money to schools and education where I can. I have a right to healthcare. I have a responsibility to help build a clinic in my lifetime, to donate to medication, to donate to science, to contribute to science, to make sure that I heal where I can and become a nurse or a doctor, whatever the case may be.
Mm.
We don't have that. And one of the best ways to get that right is to take those rights away. Let me take your rights away. So that when you come back, you're like, hey, chief. Gayton McKenzie speaks about the reason why he's so happy every single day is because he spent time in prison. He knows what it means to be confined. So now it's like just waking up in the morning and being free to breathe air and to go where I want makes me incredibly blessed and happy.
Mm.
So take some of those rights away and hopefully people will shift their minds.
Wow. In closing, man, what advice do you have for future generation of thinkers and builders, in short?
Stop wasting time with dumb people.
Yeah.
If you believe within yourself, you don't need validation from anyone else. Oh. If you believe in yourself that you are a leader,
yeah,
that you are very smart, that you are a game changer, it is your responsibility to be the biggest asshole you can be and the biggest narcissist you can be. Because dumb, useless people are incredibly arrogant in their beliefs and their abilities and their bravery to try things. So I need you to become as arrogant as you can be. Doesn't matter what they call you, Kanye West. Be arrogant and a narcissist. You know that you are here to do right. You know that you are a leader. You know that you are brilliant. Go do it and stop spending time arguing with idiots that are leading mediocre lives. Go find like-minded, crazy people like you who are doing crazy things, because the proof is going to be in the fruits of your labor.
Mm.
You can see the Yeezys. You can see the Teslas. You can see the crazy things they're building. Those are your people. Go find those people and go do crazy things with them. And then when you speak to mediocre people, listen to them out of respect in terms of humanity. They might give you some good advice. But when they criticize you, be like, oh, okay, you're an idiot. I don't have time for you. I'm God's gift to the planet. And I'm going to do the great things that I do. And unfortunately, your mind is too small to comprehend what it is I'm trying to do. So be the biggest asshole and narcissist you can be if you believe that you are a good, strong, visionary leader who actually cares about humanity and making the world a better place.
Wow. What I'm getting is stop taking advices from people who know nothing about what you want to achieve. Wow. It's powerful. Well, now we have a tradition here. Every guest that comes in on the show gets to leave behind what we call a legacy note. Now, this is your quote from your heart, whatever that you want to pass down to the future generation. It can be an advice, an idea that you want the future generation to know. So I did ask you to write it before the show.
Sure.
I can see you're already playing around with it. So whenever you're ready, you can throw the note into our legacy box. And what we're going to do with this is that we're going to compile this into a book. It's going to be a book of wisdom from all the leaders, creators, entrepreneurs like yourself.
That's so dope.
Yeah, to the future generation. So whenever you're ready.
Thank you so much, sir. Honor, Stephen Bartlett, Darren Vasio. I wish you blessings at the same level and scale and magnitude. Stephen Bartlett is absolutely brilliant. And shout out to Diary of a CEO and what he's built and how it's inspiring so many content creators out there.
Thank you.
To not just entertain, but to educate and shift minds.
Yeah.
I think he made $20 million last year just from his podcast alone.
Yeah.
So I wish you those blessings as well.
Thank you so much. Means a lot coming from God Panwa.
Come on.
I mean, listen. So thank you so much. For me, this is a very special moment because this is what I believe that legacy is made of. You know, your words will live beyond this episode that we just did here. So thank you so much. And before I just let you go, I promise, I have a quick game that I just want to play with you. And the rules of this game is that you don't have to think much. It's a 5-second rule. You give me an answer.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Go for it.
All right. So one belief you no longer hold onto.
Um, race. Black unity is going to save Africa.
Okay. Who challenges your thinking the most?
Besides myself, real life people that exist, maybe Kanye West.
What book changed your worldview?
Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki.
Okay.
No. Let me sneak another one in. 1984 by George Orwell.
Oh, okay. I need to check that one out. What's the most uncomfortable truth you've ever spoken publicly?
For the world, not really what I believe in, but for the world, no one owes you anything. No one in the whole world owes you anything. It's you and your life. It's you and your life, and it's up to you how you want it to play out.
Wow. Wow. I agree with that, actually. Mm. That's powerful. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Peter.
For coming to the show. This was a really impactful episode. And to you, our audience, thank you so much for tuning in. If there's anything that resonated with you in this powerful conversation with God Penwell, please do like, share, comment, and don't forget to subscribe. And please do get yourself a copy of his books. The links will be below in the description. This is Success Unscripted with Peter Manjat. Until next time. Baba.
Siyabonga futhi.
Hayi, ngibonga mina.
Thank you.
Ngibonga mina impela. Wow.
Another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.